time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode 79, wherein we visit with Christian Jacobs. It's the Bat Commander.
Okay.
Of the Aquabats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So that's coming up in the second and third block. I want to get to this quick because we visited for a good long time with Christian Jacobs on the set of the Aquabats TV show when
okay.
they were here filming in town. We've got a couple more reviews of the Cultural Hall podcast on iTunes. You can go there, go to iTunes and leave a review, won't you please? Here we go. There are two types of shows on this podcast, says Missy Jo. I personally like the interviews the best, but the articles and news are fun. It's great to get more than one episode a week. There are relevant issues discussed and many different points of view are represented, and I personally love it.
Well, thank you.
But hang on to that.
Oh, shoot.
From Family Focus, I haven't completely decided if I'm going to continue to listen to this podcast or not.
Scrunching my nose.
The premise is very fun. I really like the idea of discussing Mormon culture and society, but of the several shows I've listened to so far, this seems to be a means of justifying not living the gospel completely.
Oh, hey now.
Mingled with sarcasm. Justification seems to be made, which discourages full commitment to gospel standards or morality and covenants made. I give more credence to the words of our leaders, scriptures, and publications which give proper guidance, such as For the Strength of Youth pamphlet, than I do to guest speakers who have a more complex or altered view of living the gospel. I'll listen to a few more, but it's causing me to feel uncomfortable in viewing God's unchanging standards. Then I'm going to abandon this podcast and look for more wholesome listening entertainment.
Well, I certainly respect that opinion. However, I sort of view it as more like we're all human and
right.
we all make mistakes, and you might be struggling with something and thinking, oh no, is this okay? Or even if it's not okay, like there are others like me out there. So I take
more of a support, a support kind of group.
Sure.
Smile in California says, I love this Cultural Hall podcast, exclamation point.
Oh, thanks.
And then finally, from the Iceman cometh. Stupid.
Yeah, I didn't
funny
get the
reference. I know.
Sorry.
But other people are going, oh, I get it.
All right.
Funny and informative news that is about the LDS Church. The interviews are great to hear different points of views and help us all be more accepting of others.
I like that. Thank you.
There you go.
Okay.
Christian Jacobs in the second and third block of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
That's right. It's now time for the second block here of the Cultural Hall. And joining me, and let me see if I can paint the picture of this room. It's, I don't know, maybe 10 feet by 10 feet. Would you say that's right?
Yeah, it looks about 10 feet by 10 feet.
We got we got some rough patches on the walls, schedule of filming and stuff like that. It looks like that was a bad accident there where someone maybe a fist through the wall there. It's Christian Jacobs from the Aquabats.
Hello, everyone.
Thanks for being here.
And the Cultural Hall.
It's good to have you here. I kind of feel like I'm at Aquabat Central.
Well, you kind of are. I mean, everything's here. This is where we headquartered everything up for this little season that we did, and all the costumes are here. All the battle tram is here. All the things inside the battle tram are here. Monsters are here.
I think it's cool because as I
drums walk, and guitars and everything, it's crazy.
I walk in and it's just, you're just kind of in the warehouse part of Salt Lake.
Sure.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
And I walk in and it's like a whole different world. You got the different sets and I'm kind of just peeking around going, cool, cooler, awesome. Can't wait to see this. This is rad.
Giant worm. Whoa.
Yeah. So I appreciate you so much for, taking a few minutes to be with me and being here in the Cultural Hall. I also got to tell you this is a long time coming. I don't think that you know that. About 8 months ago, I get a phone call from a guy who listens to the Cultural Hall. His name is Russ, lives in Austin, Texas. He says, hey, this is what you need to do. There's a buddy of mine on Facebook who has a buddy whose name is Nate. Nate is your guys' manager.
Right, he's Nate, like, Rogers.
You need to contact Nate. Nate will get you in touch with Christian, and then maybe you'll be able to interview these guys. And so that voicemail sat in my inbox on my phone for about 6 months as I was like, okay, well, the time's not right, not yet. No, this isn't going to work. Well, I didn't. Anyway, yeah. So now here we are.
No, timing worked out really, really good, especially since we're up here shooting this season of the Aquabats Super Show in beautiful Salt Lake City. So it worked out super good. Yeah. And we have a show tonight at the Depot in Salt Lake.
You're playing a rock show.
Rock and roll shows, which is like, that's what we used to do.
The other thing that I think is funny is I walked in to do this interview. I come in through the doors, and when I had met you before, I met you last week at my day job, which we're not allowed to mention further than just my day job.
Okay, day job.
But yeah. You don't look how you looked then. And so Nate, your manager, is like, oh yeah, great, you know, he'll be with you in just a minute. And I look in, and he indicated you, and I'm like, that's not the same guy.
Who's that guy? Yeah, I'm in my mild mannered alter ego look today. So it's interesting too, once you get the Aquabats costume on, everyone's personality becomes a hyper personality. So I on the show, on the super show, on the TV show, and even on stage as the commander, I kind of become like this over the top Captain Kirk on crack or something. And like, but it, you know, and it's hard to really muster up that same kind of energy when I'm not wearing that ridiculous costume, but nevertheless, it's super awesome, and I'm really happy to be talking to you.
It's kind of just exhausting, I bet, right?
A little bit. I mean, I don't know, because I still feel like we're doing something that's like, you're a kid and you're with a bunch of your friends and you're playing a game, or you're pretending you're playing Star Wars or Cowboys and Indians or whatever. And it still feels like we're doing that, except we're trying to make a career doing it. So, so in a way, I think it's keeping us young in a lot of ways. It is exhausting, but a lot of times it feels like, you know, being a kid and playing all day long with your friends in the woods and having dirt clod fights, and you're just, you know, you just plunk down into bed and you're just exhausted, but it was like such a fun day.
Yeah.
Know? So, you know, there's definitely a different kind of exhaustion that comes with doing the Aquabats, whether it's the TV show or touring or whatever it is. It's definitely there. It's more of a playful thing, and maybe that's just me, because again, it's like the other guys sometimes look at them and you're like, what are we doing? But you know, there's a saying that we always say on the show, it's not an episode until we're laying on the dirt or on the ground in the cold and someone's throwing something at us. So like at least once or twice a week we're laying in gravel or diving on hard surfaces and someone's throwing something at us and it actually hurts. So,
and then it's an episode.
Then it's an episode. Okay, now we can say that. Finally, we did it. We're on the ground in the dirt, rolling on rocks, and someone's throwing something heavy at us. So, but you know, again, it's like a dream come true, and it's what we've always wanted to do. And so now that we're actually doing it, it's pretty surreal.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
I think it's really awesome. You know, I had the chance a little while ago to visit with your brother Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Great guy. Who
he's awesome.
I love that interview, and you can actually find that interview at theculturalhall.com. You can check it out and listen to it. And you guys, it's kind of a charmed life, it seems like. And I know it's got to be hard work, and I know that it can't be always as positive as you guys make it seem. Like, I know that there's got to be disappointments, and there has got to be, you know, heartaches and stuff like that. But it just seems like it's like, yeah, and today I had fun, and guess what I'm doing tomorrow? Fun.
Having fun. Yeah, you know, of course, with the highs come the lows, and like, I know with Parker too, he's going through some struggles, like, you know, financially, and without opening up too many cans of worms, but myself as well, like, it's up and down, and like, it's not what everyone thinks, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, those guys, they just get paid so much money to just go and goof around. And especially nowadays, I think there's an old you know, there's a missed conception that just because something's on television or just because something
big money
is on the big screen, yeah, that there's so much money involved that everyone has to be like just you know, on Easy Street or whatever. But it's really not that way, and we're really struggling. And it's, I don't want to miss lead anyone. We're definitely having a fun time, and like.
So why do it though? If it's so risky and it's so up and down.
I think that's why. Is because, you know, I'm married and Parker's married, and we have families, and. I know with my own wife, we went through many years of ups and downs with being in the band, and should we still do this? And it's not really helping out, you know, supporting a family, and you're having a great time, but really, like, how are our kids going to eat? You know, like, serious conversations. And
like, you had fun today, but see that pantry?
That's empty. Yeah, that's empty. And how are we going to pay the bills? Because you didn't sell as many T-shirts as you thought, and you're still owed money on this and that and the other thing, and... So, you know, going into debt and getting, you know, all those problems that come with getting older, you know, trying to be Peter Pan in the real world, it's like, it's not, it is really hard. So, but again, I think working hard towards doing something fun and doing those jobs where you just got to pay the bills. So, you know, I've worked many jobs. Parker's worked many jobs just to pay the bills, and, you know, working nights driving a forklift or selling computer components, you know, telemarketing or,
what's been the worst
working
thing?
That was probably one of the worst ones.
Telemarketing
was rough. Cold calling, you know, and,
what was it
being
for?
The only guy, I was working for a friend who started a business, and I was his only employee, and his business was contingent upon like selling these computer components. And you'd find deals on computer parts every morning, and then you'd call different companies to see if they needed, you know, these specific computer parts that were being, you know, ground floored or like blown out. So you'd find these like. Incredible wholesale deals on like 10,000 IC chips or whatever, and like then you'd have to call companies and say, "Hey, I've got a deal on some IC chips.
Have I got a deal on an IC chip?
I need some." And they'd be like, "Nope." I think I worked there for 3.5 months, and I didn't sell one thing.
Oh, jeez.
And but I would call all day long. I mean, for literally from like 9 a.m. to like 8 at night and take a lunch break. And that was rough. That was rough. But, and sadly, his company didn't last very long. So I tanked his company.
Yeah.
But it was just a hard time in the market, and things happen, and, like, you know, whatever. Like, anyway, we've all been there. But, you know, that was something my wife and I, we had the discussion about, and having kids and my kids seeing.
How many kids
the
you got?
Aquabats. I have 4 kids, and my kids discovering the Aquabats on their own and like wanting to get into my costumes and dress up and like, "Dad, this is cool." And seeing my wife kind of go like, "Okay, well, maybe you should keep doing this." And that happened about right around the time that we were trying to pitch Yo Gabba Gabba as well.
Where'd you get the name? Where did that name come from?
You know, we wanted to come up with like a magic word that was kind of, it was definitely nonsensical, but it had a phonetic familiarity to, or like a, you know, it's like rudimentary like sounds that you make as a kid is like ma or ga or ba, or like, you know, kids can say those words. It's like those first words that toddlers figure out how to say. It's like mama or baba, and so gaga. So we were trying to figure out a word that was magic but also sounded like something that little kids could say. It's so like gabba gabba, you know.
So way more scientific than I would have thought.
I think so. Yeah. It wasn't just like throwing it out. I mean, we really we took Yo Gabba Gabba, like the development of it, pretty seriously, and we thought about a lot of those things. And we took, you know, that was something that we did with Yo Gabba Gabba with the Aquabats. We were doing, it was like passion project at night, you know, like moonlighting, trying to like create a kid's show in our laboratory, you know, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so those were things like even the name that we thought, you know, even the name needs to be catchy. It needs to be something that kids can remember, but also needs to sound cool. And I think adding the yo to it was what kind of made it.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yo is cool. No, I say yo.
Not work. Right, let's take this back. Gabba's not coming across.
Yeah, we had pages and pages of ideas.
What were some of the other ones? What were the...
Like one of them, interestingly enough, was Boobah, which we actually ended up becoming a show. Like we were like, I kind of like that Boobah. It's easy. It's easy to say. And then like we saw in the trades, like a new show from the creator of Teletubbies, Boobah. We're like, well, that's off the list, you know? And like we were developing the music for the show, and Scott, the other creator of the show, we were listening to a lot of old school hip hop at the time, and you know, 80s hip hop like LA Dream Team and old school Boogie Down Productions and stuff like that. And we heard about this show coming out called Hip Hop Harry, and we were like, oh man, our goose is cooked. There's another preschool show that's about hip hop, and not that Yo Gabba Gabba is inherently like a hip hop show.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of the like nebulous beginnings were around simple beats, like drum machine beats and beats that you would program using the old school drum machines and things that they used in the 80s. So when we heard about Hip Hop Harry too, we were like, oh man, this isn't going to work out. So, you know, like again, going back to those things of like, you've got a dream and you got a plan, and there's just constantly obstacles that are getting in your way. With Yo Gabba or with Aquabats, and you just have to like barge through, you know, you just had to just keep going and believe in yourself and your idea and not give up, you know, because, you know, again, we were working day jobs and doing other things and trying to keep steady income coming in while we're doing all this. You know, when we started the Aquabats, we were all in our early 20s and not married.
What made you decide to do that? And also, where does that come from, Aquabats?
I think the Aquabats was like one of those things where we were friends with a lot of people in our area, and there was a lot of single people that we were, you know, friends with and, you know, had relationships with, and a bunch of friends. I was roommates with Chad or Crash McLarson, Crash, who's the bass player in the band, and we were roommates just by chance. We had a mutual friend, and I moved in with those guys, and they were in a different band. Each one of those guys was in a different band, and I had a different band with Scott, the creator of Yo Gabba Gabba. And we had friends that were all in different bands, and we were going to shows and going to the Orange County punk scene shows and, you know, like the Vandals and Sublime and, you know, No Doubt, all that stuff that was happening around in Orange County in the early 90s. And We all just decided, let's just start one band and combine all these bands
together. We don't have to keep going to all these other people's shows.
Well, like let's just make a big joke band and just play a show. The idea was to just, let's play a show at the end of the summer, and we'll just throw all our bands together and let's all play different instruments. So Chad, we thought, because the ska scene was kind of exploding in Orange County, mm-hmm. with No Doubt and Sublime and, you know, Real Big Fish, and there was a bunch of other bands that were like, this big ska scene, you know, and we were more kind of coming out of the punk thing, mm-hmm. and we were just like, yeah, let's just create like a big dorky like ska band, and everyone play different instruments. So Chad or Crash, he actually plays bass, like he's a good bass player, but when the Aquabats began, he played trombone, and like everyone switched instruments and played things that they had not played before. And of course I got stuck being the lead singer. And I was playing guitar in the other band that I was in. And I suck at playing the guitar, but, and I'm not very good at being a singer either, but something just kind of like bonded. And, it was funny cause we were really awful. I think we practiced once, and Scott, the co-creator of Yo Gabba Gabba, he came to that first practice and he brought his DJ machine and he was like scratching. Like, so we had the ska band with a DJ. Just that's totally a joke. Yeah. Like we were just throwing it all in. Cause you know how like there's like traditional ska bands and there's like these new school ska bands and they like play heavy metal. It's like ska and then it's heavy metal and it's all mixed together. Uh-huh. And there's like no respect or like it's just kind of like whatever to the old thing. This is our version of ska. And I kind of like that in a way. I like old ska too, but I just like that whole "who cares, we're doing our own thing" kind of a attitude. That at the time I felt like, anyway, when I was a kid, punk kind of had that vibe, and then it got real violent because it was focused on the football and the slam dancing and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and violence as opposed to like doing something that was going against the grain. And that's what I kind of liked about the ska scene, was it was going against the grain of the punk scene in Orange County. And so we started a ska band just as a joke, and everyone was playing different instruments. And Boyd, our trumpet player, his brother owns a wetsuit company called Alita Wetsuits in Southern California. And he, Boyd and I are big Devo fans. And so Boyd came to practice, and he's like, oh no, we practiced. And then he's like, let's make costumes like Devo, like we're all dressed the same. And he came to the show, which was that Saturday night. I think we practiced on a Wednesday, and then we played a show on Saturday. I mean, I literally wrote songs on a Wednesday and then played them on Saturday.
4 days later, like you do.
Which is how most of our songs are anyway. But so Boyd brought these hats. This is the same hats we wear. They're the helmets that we wear on stage today. And he's like, look what I made. I found some scrap wetsuit material. I found this silver stuff underneath a stack of wetsuit stuff no one uses anymore. And he made the first Aquabat helmets, and then we wore them that night. We all had matching t-shirts on, and I think there was 14 guys in the band at the time, and we had guys playing pots and pans, and Scott didn't want to bring his DJ equipment, so he wasn't scratching in between songs. But you know, there was a horn section that no one could play the horns, so I'd be like, we had the songs very like you know, mathematically laid out, like, okay, here's the intro with the horn part, then here's the verse, then here's the chorus, you know. So they'd come in all together, and it'd just be like chaos, you know, because they're trying to hit these notes that they have no idea how to hit. I mean, it was awful. But what I thought was funny was at the party, people took it real seriously, like, oh, it's ska. Ska's cool. Like,
yeah.
Let's dance. And so there was like, I have video of that first show too.
Really? Like, is it available anywhere?
Yeah, I don't know. There's some clips of it. I still have it. It's on Hi8 videotape. I should dump it to DVD before I lose it. But people are dancing and having a good time, and we're just goofing around. And I was like, this is kind of fun. Like, if we could make this into something. And so we just kept doing it, and Crash was our booking agent, and he would call up friends and goes, hey, we have a band, you know, all his friends were in like hardcore punk bands like the White Caps and, you know, HFL and Hard Fast Loud and like all these like rough bands, and they'd be like, yeah, you guys can come open for us. And so we would go like these,
but like there's 14 of us, and we wear wetsuit helmets
and glasses, and we're playing like wannabe ska. And we would get, like, people would, like, get so angry. And then that's really where, for me, it kind of ignited, like, this is awesome. This is what punk rock is, like, doing something that makes people angry. And it was great because it was, like, punker guys. They were all drinking and angry, and they wanted to fight anyway. So it was, like, we just became this target of negative energy for these guys that wanted to, like, let off negative energy. And that was exciting. I was like, yo, this is perfect. This is great. This is punk, man. You know, even though we were playing ska, you know, it was really more of punk in spirit, I think, because we were just going against the grain. And then of course, over time, people would say, well, why do you wear those costumes? And the costumes have evolved and changed. And, you know, gradually all the backstories and the folklore came up, and without spilling the beans too much, that's something that in this season of this new season of the Aquabats Super Show, we're going to be talking a lot more about the backstory and where the Aquabats came from, and
you'll tell about where the name comes from.
Yeah, it's okay. It's you know, it's funny because I'll tell you right now where the name came from for real, but for the kids, we have a few different backstories,
yeah,
and they can pick whichever one they want, because that's kind of funny, because like even in comic books or like traditional superheroes, sometimes they have different variations of their backstory, you know, like you've got Spider-Man and then you've got the Amazing Spider-Man and then you got Batman and you've got the Dark Knight, and it's like it just seems like there's all these different takes on different superheroes, so we're kind of having fun making fun of that a little bit now too. So but as far as the Aquabats name goes, I mean, it came like the first week we were like, okay, we're making this band, it's gonna be a ska band and it's gonna be silly.
This is before that first show?
This is before the first show. Okay. And it was Parker and I were talking about it, and I think we were driving to Utah to see his band Go-Go 13 or something like that. I can't remember exactly when the moment was, but it was before that first show, and we were just thinking of of bands like The Ventures or The Stingrays or The Manta Rays, or like I was really into surf music at the time. There was this kind of like surf revival that happened in the early 90s with like the Phantom Surfers and the Go Nuts and like the Tiki Tones. There was all these like bands that were in Southern California, these like there was like a surf revival kind of thing, and I was like, I thought that was really cool, and I was like, let's do like kind of like a surfy band name, like The Ventures or The Manta Rays. So we were thinking of just, you know, whatever, the like the Torkies, or, you know, we're just coming up with weird names, but all of them had the word "the" in it. So it was like The Beatles or The Rolling Stones.
The Beatles, you know, has already been taken.
Yeah, they were taken. You know,
we're like, the Beatles, the pin it.
Yeah, yeah. Man, that one, dang it. You mean there's a Beatles already? Dang it. So I think Parker or someone, we were like saying the Dingbats. No, not there's a band called the Dingbats. And we're like, and then someone said Aquabats. And I think it could have been Parker. I think it was Parker that said, what about the Aquabats? And we all started laughing. It was like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Because it paints a picture too. It's like a bat flying underwater is just like, it just seems so stupid. Yeah. So I was like, okay, that's it. The Aquabats.
It was like this light from heaven.
That's it. Oh, the dumbest thing ever. Right?
Yeah.
So it just made sense. And then we just ran with it. And I think the band has kind of, you know, just like with naming children, you know, oh, we can't name that. Like, you know, everyone's going to call him this, or, you know.
Aquabats.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't want to go through a life.
Yeah, you can't do that. So, but you just kind of end up, the band ends up really fitting the name eventually. And naming bands or naming kids, it isn't always like, it's a lot harder than it needs to be, I think. You could just name them and the kid becomes that guy. Yeah. So, but, you know.
Well, cool. Coming back in the third block, I want to talk about your family. I want to talk about how that is.
Be nice.
And I want to get into all that. That's coming back here in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. 576 to book your shoot today.
You know, you mentioned your brother's band, the Go-Go 13.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that you've ever listened to an episode of the Cultural Hall. I'll give you a pass this time.
Okay.
But our opening song was a remake by the Solutions of the Go-Go 13's Book of Mormon Stories.
Oh, wow. Okay. I know the Solutions.
Yeah, I followed
with those guys.
I followed those guys when I was in college. And I was that guy to those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Where anytime they did a show anywhere, I was always there and no one would come with me. So I was always that awkward guy in a, you know, two-tone shoes and the zoot suit.
The lurker, yeah.
And I'm like, hey, guys, how's it going? Cool, you guys playing here, huh? Well, I'm here. I'm here to skank for you. Here I am. I'm ready to go. And they're like, and Richie's here.
Yeah, perfect. No, that's rad. That's every band needs a guy like that. You know, I don't know. I found like, because we've been in the Aquabats for so long, and there's been I wouldn't say a myriad, but there's been a number of Richies, you know, like diehard fans that they're there every show, and it's interesting to see them grow up and move on and do creative things as well. Like,
really,
we've worked with, like, hey, you're a diehard fan, you're here every time, you want to come on the road with us and like do stuff, and we've taken guys on the road and they've ended up working for us and doing things with us, and it's interesting to see them get creative in their lives too. And like, I think from the outside, a lot of people look at someone like that's so focused and diehard about something and be like, wow, those people need to get a life. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see, like, those people have a life. Yeah. They just really enjoy the Aquabats, or they, it's funny, the get a life comment comes from people that just like watch football all the time.
Right. And yeah, they, get a life.
Get a life, dude. I got a fantasy football game to play. You know what I mean? Fantasy football? Really?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, like, people make fun of me for playing Dungeons and Dragons when I was 10, but there's like 40-year-old dudes like spazzing out about fantasy football. I'm depressed, man. Ugh.
Oh, my points.
Ben Roethlisberger broke his shoulder last night, man. There goes my fantasy points for this week. It's like, what, dude? Wait a second. You know what I mean? So, uh-huh. I mean, look at you. Like, you're working at another job, which will go nameless. And you're doing this podcast. And so it's like, I think people that are, you know, passionate about things and aren't afraid to show it end up becoming creative people and doing things.
Fingers crossed.
Right? Hey.
Fingers crossed.
I'm just saying.
What do you do when you're not doing all this?
You know, I live with my family in Fountain Valley, which is right next to Huntington Beach in California.
Gorgeous.
It's a really nice area. And I like to go surfing. I like to go to the beach, but... I had a little bit of a, I don't say midlife crisis, but kind of a wake-up call.
How old are you?
I'm 40. Oh, I just turned 40. So,
oh, geez.
This last year, my daughter started, she started middle school, and it kind of like shocked me because I feel like being in a band, making a children's television show, I still skateboard, I still go surfing a lot. I kind of feel like I'm a perpetual 17-year-old.
Uh-huh.
And once my daughter started junior high school, it really shocked me into like wake up call. Like my life is halfway over and my children are growing up. So I think this last year when we haven't been shooting or doing things, I've been spending a lot more time with my kids and, you know, getting into their interests and not being so much of like a me guy and realizing, wait a second, I'm a dad. Hold on. My daughter's in junior high, you know, and I don't feel like I was a deadbeat dad. I think I've been there for my kids, but I think when your kids start, like I remember my first day of junior high like it was yesterday, and thinking about that, and now my daughter is in junior high, it was really like a shock, almost like I almost got depressed.
Depressed
because I felt like I'd missed a lot of her, like, even though I didn't, I was doing the best I could, I just felt like, wow, you know, here I've been working on this TV show, Yo Gabba Gabba, and spending tons of time away from home. And then when I'm at home, I'm finding time to go surfing by myself. Or, you know, I feel like my daughter and my kids are growing up and they're going to be gone soon. Because it didn't seem like that fast. It seemed like super fast. It didn't seem like that long. My daughter's born. I have a daughter. Yay. And now she's in junior high. It's like, it just seemed like so fast. Whereas I think when we're younger, we look at time, I got plenty of time, and being kind of a younger mindset like I am, I think my whole family is, we're all perpetually 12 years old, but time goes fast. And like hanging out with my dad lives up here in Salt Lake, and he's definitely a perpetual 12-year-old. Like what did he do
professionally?
You know, when we were kids, he was our manager. We took us out on auditions and jobs, and he's always been one of those guys that just did lots of stuff. I mean, he was like a court reporter for a little while. Then he was a janitor, and then he taught school for a long time. And he just kind of jumped from job to job. But most of all, he took us on auditions, and he was our manager and dealt with our agents because we were all kid actors growing up. Mm-hmm. And just hanging out with him and seeing like myself in 30 years and thinking like, wow, like, it goes so fast. And so I've mellowed out a little bit, but I like to paint, and that's something I do with my kids. We do art together, draw. And,
good kids?
I have really good kids. My wife is like, better than me. Yeah. Like and I can't believe she puts up with me. Like, and that's kind of cliche to say, but she just...
But it wouldn't be...
I think the fact that she thought the Aquabats was stupid and that was like a waste of like, why are you in a band? That's dumb. Like really helped me like fall for her. Because she's very realistic and down to earth. And like, well, she doesn't come from, you know, I came from a bunch of crazy people that are in drama and dramatic and perpetual kids and... My parents met in college, like at drama school and musical and all this. And my wife's parents, her dad's a contractor, very successful, very salt of the earth, like hardworking. Her brother played for the Pittsburgh Steelers for 11 seasons.
Drop a name.
Football family. Chris Hoke. He played for Pittsburgh Steelers, and then he played for BYU, defensive tackle. And so they're very, like, you know, salt of the earth, hardworking families, very practical, realistic.
Very,
so she
not,
definitely,
very not in a punk band.
Yeah,
punk
no ska punk band
and,
like,
the Aquabats.
You know, family dinners would be awkward sometimes, especially before any kind of success came for me. And, you know, like, you're still doing that band thing? Like, ugh. Like, you know, okay, that's cool, man. Whatever you got to do. Not, like, not vibing me, but enough of a vibe that I was like, oh, man, I am a loser.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I think it pushes you to go that step further.
And even just having kids, period, like even having a family, like a lot of people are like, oh, I'm gonna put that off and, you know, get my career going. And I feel like if I didn't get married and have kids, I would have just been playing around my whole life. Like, I just would have been screwing around. And I think for me, and this, I'm just saying this for me, and maybe it could help you too, but, you know, finding someone that grounded me and, like, kept me in check and made me want to be a better person definitely helped me be a better person. And then creating a child with that person made me wake up and be like, oh man, I gotta really do something. Like, I gotta work, I gotta make money. Oh gosh. Because, you know, I was just screwing around surfing and going skateboarding and being a perpetual teenager. And so I think it was having a family that really turned me into workaholic guy. But again, my work is like, I'm trying to play. So it's like, I work super hard so that I can put a costume on and roll in the dirt all day.
And get stuff thrown at you.
Yeah,
so it hurts.
But it's awesome. You know, we get to create monsters and do all kinds of fun stuff. And sometimes we get to go play shows and go on tour. We haven't been playing a lot lately because of the TV show. But again, anyway, going back to that, I think my wife is the one that has really helped me keep my head on straight. But also encouraged me to say, hey, look, I know you're miserable. I know you're miserable selling computer parts.
Not selling. Yeah. You actually have to sell stuff in order to be.
Exactly. I know you're miserable trying to sell stuff. And at night going and driving a forklift for a gift basket company. I know that's miserable for you. And you know, if you can make it work, do it. I'll encourage you to help it happen. And she really has been a really great support. And it's hard. That's totally hard being away. And we've been up here for 6 weeks, and I only see her on the weekends. And that's been hard on her and the family. But she is definitely a saint.
You'll get a break there once it's all done and be able to be home.
Yeah, and that's what's good is, like, I could work for another company and then have to be gone a couple days a week traveling. And we've got a friend that works for FedEx, and he's in a management level. And he's gone a couple days a week every week. Mm-hmm. But whereas I have to, like, it's like our production schedule, it's like 3 months of intensity. And then it'll be like 6 months of, like, wow, I should get out of the house.
Yeah,
you know? I've been in my pajamas for 3 days now. Eating cereal, walking.
Come on, don't go to school. Just stay home with Dad.
Exactly.
Just stay
and then
home
she's
with
like,
Dad.
Go do your show. Get out.
Did you go on a mission?
I did.
Where did you serve?
I went to Japan. I went to Japan on my mission.
Which mission in Japan?
The Sendai mission. So
is that
where the earthquake?
I was going to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The tsunami hit. A lot of those cities, too, a couple of those cities that were totally wiped out were in areas that I served. Mm. And, you know, unfortunately, we were in the middle of production and doing a bunch of stuff here that I couldn't just bounce and go over there and help. It always seems like we're doing something and I can't just leave the country and go anywhere. But it was heartbreaking. It was a really heartbreaking thing. But, you know, I think a lot of the people in the area are okay and they're still recovering. And that's what I think is great about, you know, the spirit, the people of Japan, their spirit is like they're not going to be like helpless. They're going to help each other. You know, mm-hmm. They're just going to pick it up. And they've done it before, you know, I mean, World War II and previous to that, like they're a culture of
pulled together,
starting over together, you know, and they're great people. It was a great experience. And, you know,
a mission story.
Okay.
Can be craziest or spiritual, whatever you want to share. But
I'm trying to think of a great one. Like there's some pretty crazy ones. I had some really, really crazy ones, but they might be too crazy to tell over the mic.
Oh, there's nothing.
People think I'm crazy. People might think I'm crazy.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I saw some great, great experiences. Obviously, a ton of spiritual experiences that, you know, helped me to stay
on
the path.
Share one of those.
You know, I'm trying to think which one stands out in my mind. I learned so much more probably than I taught anyone, and everyone says that, I know, but just about like hard work. And my mission was particularly strict. Like, you couldn't listen to music, and
any music,
you couldn't call home. Like, even on holidays, there was no calling home. Mm. It was, I think, because the previous missions had wild missionaries in it. And
so the mission presidents that had come in had really like created this kind of military like system. And at the time it was a big deal, but we had fax machines in every missionary apartment, and this is early 90s, so this was cutting edge.
Yeah. But
we had fax machines, and we would fax in.
People are listening going, what's a fax? Oh yeah, yeah, I remember a fax
exactly.
machine.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
That's so weird. The fax machines have come and they're gone. You know what I mean? I mean, there still are some, but it's so weird. Like that, it was like we were on the cutting edge of technology. And every night we would do our like, okay, today I talked to this many people. I mean, we were doing our stats every day and faxing them in every day. And the next morning, the assistant to the presidents would do all the mission tallies. Every day there was a mission tally. So like. Mm. Everyone in the mission would know what was going on at every part of the mission every day.
Wow.
And, you know, that was something for me coming from, like, eating Hostess cupcakes for breakfast and going surfing and then having corn dogs for lunch and then going surfing again. That was, like, what my life consisted of before my mission. Like, having, like, a structure and focused hard work, I think that really helped me to become objective about my goals. And this isn't particularly like a super spiritual anecdote or anything, but I think for me, there's like so much I learned that I needed to learn from my mission beyond the Japanese language, which is probably something I didn't really need to learn, but maybe I did. Maybe there's still a reason I need to learn it, but I know from the people that I met and helped to like find the gospel that I know I was supposed to go there, you know? So, it's hard to explain that to a lot of people that don't have those experiences that, you know, you go somewhere and you meet somebody and you're like, I know I was supposed to meet you. Like, you just feel it. Like, I know I've met you before. I know you, you know, and there was a couple experiences like that I had in Sendai, Japan, you know, like halfway across the world, another side of the planet, people that, you know, I felt like we were kindred spirits or whatever. And
was there ever any question for you whether you'd go? Was it hard to go, or were you just like,
you know,
nope,
I went through my parents divorced when I was 14, and I went through like a tough like little period there because, you know, growing up as a member of the, you know, the LDS Church or the Mormon Church or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
There it is.
if you growing up as a member of that church, you know, the family, it's family are forever, yeah. And eternal
families. Isn't it about time?
It's about families.
Yeah, being sealed.
Yeah. So when your parents divorce, it's like it kind of threw me for a loop. And I was already kind of looping out a little bit before then. I was, you know, I was 14. I was listening to punk all the time. My favorite bands were like Black Flag and Minor Threat and The Descendants. And like I was skateboarding a lot and kind of into like rebellious culture. And when my parents divorced, it really, you know, those questions were ready to be asked. Like, is this really real? And like, how can a family be an eternal family if they get a divorce? And, you know, were my parents just, is this like Santa Claus, you know, is God like just one of those things people make up? And what's tricky is people don't realize that people that do have faith or do believe in God, they ask themselves those same questions, you know? Mm-hmm. I ask myself those same questions, people. I can't believe in a God that would let there be famine and starvation and horrible things happen like that. And people just, you know, you come out as a missionary or you say, hey, I'm, you know, I believe in this, or I'm a Mormon, and people trip on you like, well, you must be stupid. But
right.
They don't realize that you've asked yourself those same questions and then putting yourself through the test. And so when my parents split up, kind of going out and discovering the world a little bit. And what do they call that in the pilgrim? It's not pilgrims.
Amish.
Amish.
The yeah, pilgrims. It's called.
They go out and do their like
something German sounding
wild weekend yeah, or whatever. Yeah. They get the furlough weekend off or something yeah. like that. I don't know.
The furlough.
Some kind of 80s teen movie.
Yeah.
The furlough.
The furlough for the weekend.
Amish furlough. So, you know, I had my own little journey to the dark side, and I just wasn't happy, you know. Like, this was not a happy place. So by the time I became, you know, mission age, I felt like I was already like, I don't need the world. I'm ready to leave, you know. And there was a lot of things leading up to my mission. Like I had some really great opportunities to do some things. I got a couple offers to be a regular on a couple TV series that were popular at the time.
What shows?
But it's like, do I want to like go to Japan mm-hmm. for 2 years and experience a new culture and find out a lot about myself, or do I want to be on Major Dad? You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, I mean. But still, you look at it, at the time, it was a tough decision. But looking back, it's like, man, there's no question in my mind that I would have rather gone to Japan, you know, than be on Major Dad. Like, people don't even really remember that show. I mean, you do because we're probably the same age, but anyone younger than us is like, Major Dad?
Who?
What?
Huh?
That was a popular show? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All those 80s sitcoms, they were such a big deal at the time, but like, they all went away. And then I was also working at the time with Jason Lee and Mark Gonzalez at Blind Skateboards.
Oh, wow.
Right before my mission. And we started to shoot the blind days, video with Guy Mariano, and Spike Jones was part of that deal.
Oh my gosh.
And so I was working with all those guys right at that time. And I could have stayed working with those guys and stayed doing what they were doing. And, you know, obviously Jason Lee's gone on to be, he's huge. And I actually introduced Jason to his manager, became his agent, and at the time, because I was an actor that hung out with skaters, and I skateboarded too, but I wasn't even as good as those guys. Obviously, they're huge; they're great skateboarders. But so that was something I really wanted to do. I wanted to, more than acting or stuff like that, I wanted to make skateboard videos and work with those guys. And Spike was just a photographer at the time; he wasn't even like, now he's like the revered yeah. Spike Jones.
Yeah.
Like, ooh. But he was just a photographer that took pictures, and he was, you know, Adam Spiegel, you know. He's just a rich kid that had like the best camera equipment, you know, and would go out and skateboard, and he was a rad guy. I mean, he was a cool dude. And that was, to me, that was a little bit of a harder decision to make, but there was really no question, because even then at the time, I'd become the amateur team manager for Blind, and I was taking all the amateur skateboarders out to different contests, and they all wanted to like do drugs, and like, you know, they wanted me to get money to like buy them prostitutes and stuff. And I was like, what? Yeah. Like, I can't get company money to like do, and I'm not gonna do that anyway.
Come on, dude.
And they're like 13, you know what I mean? Dude, we're in Vegas. That's what you do here. And it was like such a wake up, like an answer to questions like, do I want to like leave this all behind and mm-hmm. go on a mission in Japan, or do I want to stay here and hang babysit these 13-year-old skateboarders that want to hang out with prostitutes? It's like, that actually made it easy. Like, okay, I'm just gonna split. Like, this is, I don't want to be a part of that. And I'd already kind of gone through my rebellious phase, and I, you know, coming back to the church and family values, I just felt better. I just felt like that's who I am, and I was just born that way, I guess.
Yeah. What? I got a couple more questions for you, and then I'll let you go because I know you got the show.
Yeah,
tonight,
I mean, that's deep stuff. So. Don't want to bore anybody.
No, I don't think it's boring. I think it's good. It's like I said, you know, I think this is the stuff people listen for.
Yeah.
Do you have a calling right now in your ward?
I just got released from the young men's. I was a young men, assistant young men's advisor. Like the young men's leader, I was assistant to him.
Okay.
In my ward. And I got released because I'm never around.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, the bishop called me last week. And the bishop actually, it's pretty random. He served in the same mission as I did, and we actually lived in the same apartment for
oh, wow.
6 months. He's a great guy, and he's the bishop in my ward now. It's just kind of random. He just happened to move into the area, and
Anyway, so he called me up. I was like, dude, I'm sorry, but I gotta let you go. Yeah, you're never here. Like, you're supposed to be helping these young men out, but you're just a poster in our building. Have you seen this man? Yeah. You know?
We're making church milk cartons and exactly. Your faces on it.
Exactly. So they put me back in the primary. So I go like I'm in the elders quorum presidency, and then I'll get to the primary, and then I'll get called to the young men's presidency, and then I'm in the primary. Like, it's because I'm always gone. So mm-hmm.
There and gone, and there.
Yeah, there and gone. There. And the primary is the one thing. Like, who cares? They're just little kids.
I love it. If you could pick a calling for yourself, what would you pick? You can make one up if it doesn't exist already. What would you pick for yourself?
I think like we all have a calling in life, and beyond just being in the church, a church calling. And like, I think being a better missionary, a better representative of what I believe, I could always do better at that. And I think right now doing what I'm doing and being kind of in the world and not of the world, in kind of a little bit of a higher profile zone, you know, mm-hmm. doing things like the TV shows and putting myself out there, you know.
Doing things like the cultural hall.
I think, you know, everything counts in large amounts, right? That's Depeche Mode. But yeah. I think if I had more time to devote to a calling, I'll do whatever.
Doesn't matter.
I just feel bad not having time. So I think the time that I do have, I you know, want to focus on being a better person and a better human being when I can be out here in the world, and then at home being a better dad, like being a more available dad. I think mm-hmm. that's what I'd like to do, like better. And I don't feel like I'm a terrible one. I just feel like I could be better, you know, just being around more.
Yeah. What is your favorite part of your faith?
That's interesting. I think it's grounding.
Your kids. No, that's not
makes me grounded. Like, I can't do anything. Like, I can't smoke. I can't drink. It's really lame. No. I think it's just, like, knowing that there's a plan, and there's like a reason that we're doing things, and there's a way that we're supposed to treat each other, and that we're supposed to treat each other like family. I think those answers are like, they're grounding, and it's securing you. Like, I'm in the entertainment industry, so I'm around insecure people all the time. Mm-hmm. And people that are like compensating or pulling power moves to show other people, to justify their jobs, you know, like how that is. Like, some people, they come in and they bark really loud and they talk really loud and cuss a lot and say this and, you know, to show, like, they're basically performing and saying, like, I know what I'm doing. My job is secure, mm-hmm. you know? You need me here because I'm the only one that knows what they're talking about, you know? I like the fact that my faith and believing that there's a purpose and there's a plan, it helps me to, I don't want to say forgive people like that, but like understand, like, man, like, look in behind, instead of like someone that's cursing at me or yelling or acting irresponsible, it helps me to understand their behavior better, mm-hmm. That they don't have there's nothing grounding them, and there's like, it's like treading water. Like, they're grasping for something, whether it's a paycheck or being popular or famous or whatever. They're grasping for like stuff in the world that just doesn't matter. None of this really matters, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think in finding out what I wanted to do, or what we were gonna do, like, am I gonna keep being in the Aquabats? Am I gonna keep doing Yo Gabba Gabba? Should I quit my job that I don't like and it brings me down, but it's paying the bills? Should I quit and go for it and do this Yo Gabba Gabba show? I think that the thing I like about my faith is, like, you can get, I feel like there's answers to prayers, and there's a peace that you can get in your life that without it I wouldn't know. It would just risky and insecure and, like, you know, like, what's going to happen, and tense and stress. And there's like a whole lot of that stuff that goes away. Cause does it really matter that I'm in the Aquabats? It doesn't matter. Mm. Like, in 50 years, like, hopefully people remember the Aquabats, but you know what? If they don't, I don't care. You know, it's more important about
what you're bringing to the table today. And with Yo Gabba Gabba, like the lessons that we're trying to teach kids about sharing and caring, and it's more, that's more important than selling bazillion backpacks or having a mansion up on the hill from all the cash I made off of my job. Like, it's more important to like pass on love and goodness than it is to cash in on deceit and deception. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And to me, that's so grounding and so like, it's life affirming. Like, that's great. Like, that's something to live for every day. Like, giving out high fives and smiles is like way better than taking someone's $20, you know. Like, it just makes you feel more alive, and it gives you a purpose. Like, it's like, it's purposeful, and it helps you get through those tougher days, and your interactions with other people, it helps you understand them and tolerate people get bummed on the word tolerate,
but I get what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, to understand other people, and I don't want to say give them a pass, but like, it helps you love people better, you know? I mean, the Savior, that's what he taught, like Jesus taught, love one another. And like, that's a big thing. If you're going to be a Christian, you got to be a Christian, you know?
Yeah.
Like driving down the freeway and there's like those not of this earth stickers and like, Jesus rocks, and then that car cuts you off and the guy flips you off. It's like, dude, wait a second. Like, that's not Jesus. You know, the other day, like, I get these rashes up here because the skin, the air is so dry, you know. And
up on the upper part of your face.
Just on my face, like my eyes, like I get these rashes because the air is so dry. And like, I put makeup on every day and it dries your skin out. And I've had some unusual rashes this season because of that.
It's been a particularly painful rash.
Yeah, I have eczema or something, and it never flares up in Southern California because it's more humid, you know. But I was dealing with it one day, and one of our crew members walked by, and she says, "Jesus doesn't love you, I guess." And I was like, "Jesus has nothing to do with this, you know. That's science, lady.
Yeah,
that's biology working."
Yeah,
and so you know. You know, if you're going to be Christian or you're going to believe in Jesus, like, you don't need to preach it. You don't need to like blast people with it, but you just need to live it, you know?
Greatest lesson you'll ever teach.
Yeah, and then people just go like, wow, why are you different? Why are you so happy all the time? Like, I have a good teacher, you know?
Yeah.
His name's Jesus.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, well, yeah. You know,
no, absolutely.
Without being cheesy about it.
No,
but.
It's true. I believe it. Yeah. I got one more question before I let you go.
Sure.
We ask people to climb up on the Rammy Umptum and let everyone know where they can get in touch with you, where they can follow you or tweet you or any of that stuff. So now is the time to tell people where they can see the show or Facebook, all that stuff.
Well, okay. So the Aquabat Super Show is on the Hub, which is Hasbro and Discovery Channel's new baby. It's not so new anymore, but the Hub, and then it just came out on Netflix, so you can see the Aquabat Super Show on Netflix. Do a search for it. It's free. We're also on iTunes, which is, I know there's money involved with iTunes and it changes hands, but it's probably cheaper than getting cable, and it's the best quality to see the show. If you want to see the show in really high quality, it's on iTunes as well. And then there should be some DVDs coming out next season, but in the spring.
Facebook?
I'm not personally on Facebook. There's like a lot of imitators. I don't do Facebook for some dumb reason. I don't know. Everyone always looks at me sideways like, why are you on Facebook?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't have any time to like.
I've got kids.
That's my Facebook. So, but the Aquabats, we have theaquabats.com. There's an Aquabats Facebook. There's an Aquabats Twitter. Follow me at the Aquabats on the internet. And then there's yogabbagabba.com. YoGabbaGabba is on Nick Jr. It's also on Netflix. And we have a Facebook and a Twitter and an Instagram and all that stuff.
Cool.
And some bread.
And a guy.
And a guy. And some sandwich meat. And you put them together and make a sandwich. So, yeah, just check it all out. The Aquabats. Remember, the is important in the Aquabats. It's just not a random gathering of Aquabats.
It's the
Aquabats.
Cool. Okay. Well, we hope this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body. And
yes.
That if you're not able to listen this week, you'll be able to listen next week. And that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Onegaishimasu.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be